You're listening to The Bridge Metro West, located at 7 Strathmore Road in Natick, Massachusetts. For more information about The Bridge Metro West, our weekly Sunday gatherings, and other events, go to www.bridgemetrowest.com.
Today I want to talk about endurance, character, and hope. So I'm going to slap you around a little bit. No, I'm not going to slap you around, but it's what we need. So Romans 5, starting in verse 3, I'm going to read out of the English Standard Version today. It says, not only that, but we rejoice in our sufferings. Do we really? Is it like the collective we? Is it like, you know, me, myself, and I? But this is what Paul is saying. Not only that, we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope. And hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. Notice the progression. Suffering is not the end of the story. It is part of the human existence. In one way, shape, or another, we endure suffering. Some more than others, but it's all relative. I mean, the reality is, suffering is sort of, there's no empirical scale that says, like, you are at suffering level point, 8.5. Because your 8.5 might be 1.2 to someone else, and the 1.2 person is going to look at you and say, what are you crying for? It's not that bad. But suffering doesn't work that way. It is relative to whatever your strength and endurance level is. And we talked about it a few weeks ago, like when you first start working out, it's miserable. I took a long time without working out. Now, I had spine surgery, so that was my excuse. But 18 months after the spine surgery, and I'm still blaming the spine surgery for not working out, I realized that this is no longer a viable excuse. It's time to suffer. And I'm telling you, that first couple weeks, like, it was the last thing I wanted to do. And I don't do all that much. I do like lightweights, high reps. You know, I get on the Peloton, I do the bike thing, get my heart rate up. And I was just miserable. And the problem with Peloton is, like, anytime you're riding a class, there's other people riding the class, even if it's not a live class. And then you can see, like, people, like, it'll tell you kind of what their screen name is, what their gender is, what their age is. And then I'm on the Peloton and I'm getting, like, beat by some 60-year-old woman in Illinois. That does not make you feel good. I was suffering. And I was not rejoicing. Suffering is not the end of the story. But once you press through that moment or those moments, you start to see the benefit. You start to see that you are producing something greater in yourself. That is the point of training. That is the point of exercising. The point of lifting weights is to literally cause at a cellular level what some might interpret it to be catastrophic damage to the muscle. If you're looking at it like those cells are like, don't do this, don't do that, don't do it, and now bam, they get broken down, but so that something stronger can be built up in the wake of that movement. And so movement is not always fun. Movement is not always easy. But on the other side of movement, the heart of the being has greater capacity to pump what is necessary to the members of the body. Does that make sense? Suffering is not the end of the story. It is the beginning of a process. Endurance is forged in the fire of affliction. It is not passive waiting, but an act of perseverance, a decision to press on when everything in you wants to quit. When I was young, I played soccer for a lot of years, and you had to do a lot of running in soccer. I don't really like running, like, for the sake of running. Now, if you roll a ball out, I will chase it like a dog. But, like, just to run, I ran track 1 year, and that was honestly because of a girl. I was just trying to stay around this girl. It was the most miserable year of my life. They made me run the 400, and I think I increased my time, or I bested my time by like 1 second over the course of the year. I was just totally, like, that's the worst race ever. Except that one time that I had to run 5.6 miles, and I thought I was gonna die. And then you get to college, you just run around the field 150,000 times. because that's what they want to make you do. And I have a choice in that moment. And I would be intermittently like either muttering negative things to myself as I was suffering, or I'd start quoting scripture as I'm running around and I feel like I'm gonna die. Like it was like my flesh and my spirit were having a battle in the midst of this battle to see who is gonna have dominion over my thoughts and my beings. Now, I don't want to even say what the things that I might have been muttering at the age of 18 when I'm getting into college and I'm running around a field, but I was battling with myself. Sometimes in life, when we're going through what we call trials or what we call suffering or difficulty, we suffer. We go through that same battle of dominion. When you are in pain, whether it's physical or emotional, your flesh wants to rise up. Your flesh wants to sit on the thrones of your soul. But my God is still king. Jesus is still seated high above all principalities, powers, rulers, and authorities, and circumstances of life. And he wants to be on the throne of your heart, even in the midst of suffering. Does that make sense? So as we endure, God begins to shape our character. Some people want to get to the end of the race without running it. They love the idea of kind of passing through the ribbon at the finish line, but not the process that it actually takes to get there. And so we tend to want to rush toward this kind of nebulous idea called destiny without allowing God to fashion the character within us that will enable us to stand strong once we have the responsibility of destiny rested upon our shoulders. This is why so many times in this life and in the kingdom, the most gifted people aren't necessarily the ones that make it. As a matter of fact, even in business, entrepreneurs, people that engage in the marketplace, oftentimes it is not the most gifted, even in the music realm. It is not the most gifted that make it. It's the ones that remain the most consistent. And the gifted people are left behind. They're left in the shadows because they thought that they could get there merely on gift, but they never went through the process of developing character that would support it. It's the same thing in every sphere of culture. So as we endure, God shapes our character. He chisels away the rough edges, refining us into a vessel of honor and a vessel of his glory. Now, if you just met me, you might think, oh, well, he still has some rough edges, but you don't know me 20 years ago. There is no chisel that has been sharper in my life than Miss Debbie. She's not like the kind of sander that you put on your hand and you sand. You got to attach that thing to a power tool and then just get down and then dig down into the deep recesses of my rough edgedness. And now you get to see me as I am today. As a matter of fact, it was Debbie's birthday a couple days ago. Happy birthday, Debbie. Thank you, thank you. So we celebrated her. I even surprised her, which, I don't always do, but... See, the thing is, she likes to choose her own gifts for like months. And so she'll say, I want to buy this, but it's for my birthday. And then it just keeps adding up. And then I feel like, do I spend more money to surprise her or do I not? Like, I don't know. It's not as Helen would say, it's not in the budget. I don't think Helen's here today. She would be over there if she was there. That's like the Helen Memorial row in the back there. One of these is where you're going to take that wing out and Helen's going to walk in and not know what to do. Then we'll take this wing out and Mama Verna will be like, where's my seat, Pastor Paul? I ain't sitting in the middle. Okay. How do you get endurance? How do you get endurance? Oh, it's so much fun. Well, number one, suffering produces endurance. Yay. Somebody praise him. Yay. And there was much rejoicing. I know you caught that. We rejoice in our sufferings. I mean, again, suffering's a floating scale. I did an international trip. I don't want to say it publicly because people watch from the nations. But now you got to understand that in my younger days, I was a musician that was trying to kind of make it. So I stayed in some pretty bad hotels, motels. I don't even want to say. some of the things that I observed and saw in some of the places that I stayed in. But I just stayed in the worst hotel I've ever stayed in my life. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was a hotel actually. It was a building with rooms and inexplicable odors. And I came back to the room after doing a conference, you know, speaking for a few hours and ministering and then, you know, doing dinner and being all social, which you guys know I love. And then there was like this unexplained pervasive scent of urine. I couldn't figure out where it was. Guys, I'm telling you, like Debbie had given me some wipies for the plane, you know, because you wipe the plane down a little bit if you want to do that. I took those things out. Like, I was literally scrubbing the bathroom by hand. And I could not figure out where the smell was coming from. I couldn't. And then I started getting a rash on my feet. I'm in another country. I think I'm about to die. I'm going to wake up, my feet are just going to fall off. Like, you know, those kind of the thoughts that sometimes run through your head, you know. So then I'm like, okay, I need some air. Like, so I open the window, and in this particular area of this particular city, the air's not particularly fresh. So that didn't work out. So I shut the window. I'm like, okay, there's this little mini split. I'm going to turn the mini split on. I turn the mini split on. It starts blowing in cigarette smoke. Oh, I was suffering for Jesus. Now, day one, I pull out my Hilton app, and I'm like, this is not good. And I had a hint, you know, because as we were approaching the hotel, or whatever this place was, you know, the guy that was driving me was telling me, it's a good hotel, it's good, the rooms are clean and tidy, and then, you know, and he kept repeating himself. It was like about a half hour, 40-minute drive, you know, but with a little bit more energy as we got closer. And then as we pulled up to it, he said, I hope it's okay. That was probably the hint, right? And then I got in there, and so day one, I was just like, okay, I pull up the Hilton app, and there's like, oh, there's a Hilton 0.7 miles away. I could go there and I could walk, but I stopped and I said, Lord, what do you want me to do? And he said, stay. That was before I had the rash on my feet. I might not have listened on the back end, because now I don't know, what is this? Is it bugs? I don't know. I still don't know what it was. But I put some, I don't know, some kind of Chinese stuff on it. Oh, I just lit it over. I put some stuff on it, and it went away, and it was fine. But I came armed, too, because I'd been sick. So, you know, Jennifer Show gave me some syrup of unknown origin. Look, when I'm not feeling well, I'll do anything. I don't care. Like, you just give me an ointment, you give me an oil, you give me whatever it is, I'll take it. I don't know. I trust you guys probably too much. So suffering produces endurance. The Lord just said, stay. And I don't know why he said stay. I really wanted to be in the Hilton, but maybe it was worth more for me to be in that moment and maintain relationship than it would be to have my own comfort. You just don't know. But 10 out of 10 times between that and the dung floor huts that I stay in the tribal regions of South Africa, I will stay in the hut 10 out of 10 times. I ain't never gotten a rash on my feet. I never, like, and it's clean air out there. It's nice. It's actually, it's almost like glamping, except the floor's made out of poop, but that's fine. So we rejoice in our sufferings, not because we enjoy pain, but because we understand what God is doing through it. The natural things speak of the invisible. If you learn about the body's response to movement, to exercise, to strength training, you'll begin to understand how we build endurance at the spirit and the soul level. So suffering is not the end of the story, it is the beginning of transformation. And endurance is not passive. As much as we like to get the gadgets, like, and I don't know if those exist so much anymore, but I remember when I was a little kid, you'd watch TV and like people would stand on like a platform and have this big rubber thing and it would sort of shake them and vibrate them, and it was supposed to convince you that if you do that, you'll burn body fat. Maybe it works to a small degree. Somebody's going to come up to me and, well, they did studies and they showed that. I don't know, but I don't see that much anymore. And the process of enduring is not a passive process. You have to be actively engaged in whatever it is that is before you in order to endure it. Endurance will keep pressing forward when everything inside wants to give up. And you will have moments in your life where you want to give up. No one is exempt. In this spiritual walk, with this walk with Jesus, there are going to be times that you want to give up. Don't give up. The Greek word that Paul uses for endurance speaks of steadfastness, which speaks to the ability to stand firm under pressure. When we endure, we become stronger. The trials that once overwhelmed us has become stepping stones toward greater faith. What overwhelmed us in one season will make us overcomers in the next. I know I said season. But I'll say the moments that overwhelmed us in one storm of the season will cause us to overcome it in the next storm that passes by. What crushed us in one battle will make us more than conquerors in the next. We don't just automatically become what Paul says, more than conquerors. We build ourselves up into that. We don't automatically become overcomers. The Lord puts circumstances in our lives that strengthen us so that we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. There's this passivity where we receive the gift of grace by the blood of the Lamb. Salvation is free, but overcoming is the option. Take the option. It's not an easy road, but take the option. James 1, 2 through 4, many of you know this. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. That includes the refrigerator and the dishwasher breaking in the same week. I'm going through trials, brother. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. That biblical concept of perfection really is, it's about completion. Because we're not really going to be perfect in this age, although that time will come at the fullness of time, but there is a completed work of Christ that he wants to enact in your life if you're willing to walk out the process with him. Endurance is a marker of royalty. Romans 8:15, we've been given the spirit of adoption, which means we've been taken out of the domain of darkness. We've been placed in the kingdom of his light. We are now in a royal household with royal responsibility. And so endurance is the marker of royalty. We see that in 2 Timothy 2:12. If we endure, we will also reign with him. But if we deny him, he also will deny us. People don't like that. But sometimes we put expectations on God that we would not put on ourselves or anyone else. We had a son. We still have him. It's not past tense. Just to be clear. We didn't auction him off. We didn't put him in a pit and sell him. Considered it once or twice. Especially now, he's a fetching young man. We could get a pretty penny for him. Anyway, I'm not endorsing that. So we have son, right? But as we raised our son, if he never stayed in our house, even though he has access to everything in our house, but he would go, he met some guy, and he would go to their house, and he would call their parents, mom and dad, and you know, father, mother, brother, and he ate off of that table. And he never came home. And he continuously denied that we were his parents. At some point, we would let him eat what he was choosing to eat. We would let him feed upon that which he was choosing to eat. This is how the kingdom works. People are like, well, why does God send people? Why does God? Look, the word already says, behold, I put you before you blessing and curse, life and death. Choose life, choose good, choose blessing. But like toddlers, we want to run to the stove and put our hand on a burning element. You only do it once. I'm not saying that you should, you know, maybe you should stop your toddler from doing that. But if they do it, look, they're not going to do it again unless like there's something seriously wrong, then seek medical attention. So many of the arguments that I come across is, you know, people that you know, whether they're deconstructing their faith or whatever it is, you know, they're putting attributes on God that they wouldn't even hold themselves to. God has set a table before you in the presence of the enemy, but he will not make you eat from it. He did not create robots. He created man and woman in his image with free will. And so we get to choose. And based on the choice, if we identify him and we name him, we're in the house. If we deny him, we have chosen not to be in the house. But we want to blame God for our choices, just like kids do to their parents. Choose life. God allows testing not to destroy us, even though sometimes it feels like we're being destroyed, but to develop us. And I'm not even saying that every negative thing that comes into your life was sent by God, but what Romans 8:28 says is he will work all things for the good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. Sometimes bad things just happen. But what the enemy meant for evil, God will turn to good. If you endure, you will see the goodness of God. The endurance we build, and I'm going to say it again, the endurance we build in one season will sustain us in the next. And that's true, man. When I was young, like, you know, in my 20s, early 20s especially, like, I worked out a lot, like, you know, 2, 4, sometimes 6 hours in a day. I lived off of that for years, even after I stopped working out. Eventually, it catches up with you. Eventually, you get a dad bod, and then you got to start working fresh. But what you do today will sustain you the next time you have hardship. And so you might not even be in hardship right now, but be disciplined so that you are able to endure it when it comes. Jesus said, in this world, you will have trouble. Take heart, I have overcome the world. How do we develop character? Well, endurance produces character. See, and we're going to get to hope, but sometimes when we feel hopeless, it's a symptom that we have not walked through this process with the Lord. Everything's a symptom. We can trace it back to the root. But if we don't have character in our life, we're blown about by every wind of doctrine, every circumstance, every disappointment. We're all in, we're not in, we're all in, we're not in, because we don't have character, which means we have not learned to endure. And endurance is not about surviving tribulations. I like that word, tribulations. Endurance is about strategic transformation. The Lord wants to be strategic in the way he positions you in your life so that he can transform you from one level of glory to another level of glory. It's what he's teaching the church in Corinth about being transformed, but it's not a charismatic magic trick. He uses life circumstances to cause us to make a choice, a conscious choice to endure through momentary afflictions. And look, he's living from the scope of eternity. So some afflictions and some difficulties that we go through go over the course of years, but in the scope of eternity, it's a grain of sand. He is more focused on your eternal well-being than your momentary comfort. Just kind of in the same way that we are as parents. You know, I've said this often, when I engage with my son, if I have to discipline my son, it's never just about the moment. My thought has always been, from the time that he was an infant, who is the man that he will be when he's 30, and how what are the decisions I'm making today that will put him on that trajectory? And sometimes I have to make uncomfortable decisions, even for me and my wife, in order to prophetically see the path that the Lord has him on and be a guidepost to help him stay on that trajectory. How much more our Father is looking at your life and seeing your potential in a future age, in a future time when you're walking in greater glory, greater anointing, greater authority, greater power, and then, of course, even into eternity, that he is more willing to shape you and use circumstances of life to transform you than to leave you in the squalor of your humanity. It's like refining fire. When gold is dug up, you don't just go and make a ring. You have to refine it. You've got to burn off the impurities. You got to put it in fire so that it can come out and shine. That's where the Lord has you today, and some of you in greater measure than others. This is why endurance is a product of the goodness of God, because he wants to burn off of you, remove off of you that which does not produce life, and leave you in a state where not only life is produced in you in the moment, but he uses you as an instrument to awaken others to life in the future time. That is the very definition of the goodness of God. Isaiah 48:10, I have refined you, but not as silver is refined. Rather, I have refined you in the furnace of what? Of suffering. It's a New Living Translation. What is God doing? He's refining our character. He's developing in us the nature of Christ. He is making us a people who stand firm, who love well, and who remain faithful regardless of circumstance. This is who we are called to be. I'm kind of a hammerhead in this regard. But his divine power has given you everything that you need for life and godliness according to your knowledge of him, so you are without excuse. But I'm not here to beat you over the head if you're feeling down. I'm here to lift you up and say that his love will abound to you as you stand up in him, as you continue to walk this thing out called faith, as you begin to cause the depression that's on you to have less power over you, as you begin to cause the anxiety that it tries to attach itself to you have less power over you, because where there's depression, he says, my joy will be your strength. Where there's anxiety, he says, I will give you a peace that doesn't make sense to your mind in the moment. And then other people are going to look at you and say, what's wrong with you? And I'm going to say, I've got Jesus, oh, the Spirit of the living God dwelling inside of me. His divine nature is coursing in my spirit man right now. And even on your weirdest, darkest day, look, man, when I was, well, I don't know, 21 years old, some of you have heard this story before, I pumped gas. I was a fuel transfer engineer. If a girl asked me what I did, I'm a fuel transfer engineer. Yes. I was smoking cigarettes. I was like drinking like Sutter home wine. Like it was bad. Like it's bad. Like, no, I mean, I'm no judgment if that's what you drink, but it's bad. It's not good. I was trying to convince myself that, you know, I didn't have a problem with alcohol back then, but I still loved Jesus. And I was trying to get myself out of the muck and mire, this pit that I had dug for myself. I wasn't even really trying. I didn't really know what I was doing. But his presence was still upon me in such a way that people would drive across town and pay more money to get gas at my gas station because they couldn't figure out why I had so much joy. Now, I didn't know that I had joy because it's like 6 in the morning, it's raining. It's like, and there's like, you know, 8 cars like across 2 islands. I'm the only one there pumping. People are honking their horns at me. And every once in a while, my anger kind of rose up and all that. But then like I go up to somebody's window. This happened often, not every day, not even every week, but often. And people would look at me and say, what's wrong with you? Because when you pump gas, like you're the bottom of the barrel, like the guys in the trash truck, they come in and they look down at you. Like everybody looks down at you. And then you see everything. You see all the criminals. Like everybody needed to get gas. We didn't have electric cars back then. Everybody's come to the gas station. One guy pulled up in a van. He opened up the back of his van. He just had like piles of weapons in the back of his van. I was just like, I don't know who this dude is, but I ain't gonna mess with him. Like I'm just not, yes, sir. Okay, fill it up with regular, yes, sir. Okay, we'll do that. We'll move along now, thank you. You know, I was the only guy that worked there that still had my license because everybody else had been busted for drugs. The DEA regularly drove by, like, and just, they would slow down in front of the gas station. They would look in. We had cannabis plants growing in the pots of the islands at the flowers and then a pot plant. I'm not even kidding. Every time the DEA drove by, I was like, oh, Jesus, help me. The guy that I work with, like he would come walking in with his dog and he just like smoked weed and taking mushrooms. Like he saw like 80 cars at the island. I was like, there's nobody there, so it's fine. I'm exaggerating, that didn't happen, but that did, I mean, it did happen. He did come in tripping often. Sometimes Christ in you can be the hope of glory on a day where you feel no glory at all. Don't be surprised that day you wake, as a matter of fact, sometimes now when I wake up really cranky, I just know this is the day that there's gonna be a divine appointment. I don't like it, but he is faithful. So how do we live a life of hope? I feel hopeless. The world's worse than it's ever been. Like, I don't know. I don't know what the metrics of that are. But usually when someone's all bent about what's going on in the world, I tell them to go read some history books. I do. It's true. It's my normal pat answer. Because when someone says that to me, then I automatically understand they have not read history. They didn't pay attention in class. And I'm not making light of circumstances that are in the world today, but you don't have to go back that far. Just look over the last 100 years. Look at World War I. Look at World War II. Look at the Vietnam War. I didn't really grow up in that. I was sort of born in it. But my mom would talk about, like, when we lived in a particular area, my dad was still, he was deployed in Vietnam, and the men would drive down the street in the government cars and their dress blues, and all of the wives would get really tense because they were wondering if that was the day that that car was gonna pull in their driveway to tell them that their spouse was dead. It happened every day. Every day. And again, suffering, it's relative, right? But there's bad things happening on the earth today. It's just that we find out about everything that happens all the time, every single day, because we can't put this thing down. And then we wonder why we're anxious. We wonder why we're depressed. Turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full into his wonderful face, and the things of this earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. When Paul is writing to the church of Rome, it's right around the time of Nero, who's a Caesar. And he's taking Christians and he's tying them to stakes and he's lighting them on fire in his garden just for fun. So when Paul's talking about persevering through trials, enduring through difficulty and suffering, he knows a thing or two about it. And this is happening on the earth today. I mean, maybe not to that extent, but there are bad things happening to Christians. The church is suffering today in nations every day. That's the one thing that's not reported, by the way. So how do you fashion hope in your life? Character produces hope, but you don't have character unless you've learned to endure difficulty, uncertainty, your own doubts. What do you do when you're not sure what to do? You stay the course. That's what you do. There have been so many times in my life where I don't know what to do. I don't really know. I feel uncertain. I feel like I'm on shaky ground. I don't know. And I just say, what was the last thing the Lord told me to do? That's what I do. I don't leave because of circumstance. I don't shift because of difficulty. I stay focused on whatever the last thing that I was sure about, and I stay the course. Sometimes muttering along the way, sometimes complaining and all of it, but I can take captive those thoughts and make them obedient to the voice of Christ. I just don't always do it. What is the process that leads to hope? A deep, unwavering confidence in God. But it's not just any hope. Paul says it is a hope that does not put us to shame because it is anchored in God's love. The Passion Translation says, this hope is not a disappointing fantasy. I love that line. Hope is not blind optimism. It is not wishful thinking. It's not buying a lottery ticket and hoping that you win. It is much deeper than that. Hope is rooted in the faithfulness of a God who always keeps his promises. James 1:12 says, blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life which God has promised to those who love him. Somebody's happy in the room. Endurance is defined as this: the ability to do sub-maximal work for a long period of time. Some of us are more sprinters in faith. Like, we run really hard and then we drop off the map. And we run really hard and then we drop off the map. And we run really hard. That is not the life of the kingdom. We often say it's a marathon, not a sprint. And I don't like saying that because I can't even imagine running a marathon. Yeah, I see you guys looking at me. Me, I ran a half marathon. I could run a I don't even know if I could run a tenth of a marathon at this point. To be honest with you, like 2.6 miles, like you want to see me in a bad mood, catch me at like mile 0.8. Now imagine, like even in high school, the most miserable day of my life was when I had to run 5.6 miles with no ball in front of me. That's just my maturity level, guys, I guess. I'm like a dog at the dog track. Put a rabbit in front of me or something, I'll chase it around forever. But just to run for running? I bless you and your tenacity and your perseverance and your character. I would definitely hope that I make it to the finish line or I just stop and get a slushie at 7-Eleven. But the interesting thing about this whole idea, again, the natural things speak of the invisible. The heart is at the center of our ability to produce endurance. And the heart is the thing that is affected the most when we endure. It pumps harder. With one single pump, it's able to pump a greater amount of oxygen to the extremities when you endure. So it's no wonder that all across Scripture we see examples where we are exhorted, it's a nice Christian term, encouraged, commanded, take heart. Take courage. Don't wait for your heart to rise up. Don't wait for courage to come. You take it. If you're in a difficult situation, you take heart. Sometimes you've gotta just quiet the realm of the soul, the mind, the will, and the emotions. When fears rise up, when anxiety rises up, when depression tries to come against you, and you gotta make the decision, I'm gonna take heart. I'm gonna take courage. I'm gonna be bold. I'm gonna be strong because I know the Lord, my God, is with me. Take it. Don't wait for it to come. Don't wait for a ministry team to come up and pray for you. Look, it's on the table. You take it. Take it. Choose endurance, choose character, and have unshakable hope on the other side of adversity. Not even the other side, in the midst of it. Though you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you will fear no evil. Why? Because God is with you. By the way, you don't set up camp in the valley of the shadow of death. Some people like to do that. We become more married to our infirmity than we are to the Spirit of the living God. We're more afraid of getting better than we are of the thing that we are familiar with. Be free. And if you don't feel free, you war with those around you until you're in freedom. Some of you today, you're in the middle of suffering. Now, I don't see anybody that's wearing the stripes of their faith on their back, but like I said before, like it's a sliding scale. What overwhelms you? What clouds your vision? What are the events in your history that you've never quite been able to let go of? And when you are in the middle of suffering, if you don't endure, you become weary. You're gonna be weary anyway. Paul tells the church, you know, he's writing to Galatians and he says, do not become weary in well-doing, for at the proper time, you will reap a harvest. Last week, I read a scripture about enduring and that your work will not be in vain. When a farmer plants a seed, he's not thinking, oh, this seed ain't ever gonna grow. It'd be like the Eeyore farmer. Some people are like that. It's like you cast bread upon the water, you cast a seed on the ground. I'm never gonna see a harvest. Man, I'm just gonna go eat nachos. Do not become weary in well-doing, for at the proper time, you will reap a harvest. The King James says, if we faint not, don't faint, endure. Hear this, God is not finished with you yet. I don't care, from the youngest to the oldest, Moses was 80 when God called him back to Egypt. I don't know if I want that for me, but like when I'm 80, I want to start coasting. I mean, I don't ever foresee myself retiring. We had to do one of those timeshare presentations and they're like, well, when do you want to retire? What do you want to do? I was like, what's that, retirement? I don't know what retirement is. Like, I don't ever think I'm going to retire. Like, it's like, we were like the worst timeshare people like ever. It's like, we're never going to do this. I'm just doing this to get the free gift. Well, I don't even know what the free gift was for that one. Oh, it was points. It was just points. But it was like a Zoom meeting. I didn't have to go anywhere. It was great. I'll take the points. I'll take my Hilton points. It's fine. He's not finished with you yet. The hardship that you are enduring, he is using to build something in you. He's building a strength that will last, a character that reflects Jesus, and a hope that will never fail. And then you will be the bastion of hope for those around you. You can't pull people out of something if you're in it with them. Sometimes in our quest to be relevant, like we just decide, I'm gonna get down in the pit with them. No, get out of the pit. Somebody's gotta pull them out. Get to a place of fortified safety in him. Yeah. Psalm 27. Then you have a place that you can pull people out of. Don't try to be so relevant that you get in the muck and the mire with people, because now you're not giving them a target to shoot for. So don't shrink back. Don't lose heart. Press on. God is faithful. Take heart. Take courage. It's on the table, and it is for you.
Thank you for listening to this message from the Bridge Metro West in Natick, Massachusetts. Paul David Guidry is the senior pastor at The Bridge. For more information about The Bridge Metro West family, our gatherings and events, visit www.bridgemetrowest.com or call us at 508-651-0277.